Namaste. So we are on chapter 14th of Essays on the Gita, which is still continuation of Canto 3 of the Gita. So we are still in the third chapter of the Gita, Srimad Bhagavad Gita. And here we see chapter 14. So the reason is that this background fundamental Shobhinda is taking great pains to clear it for us so that there is no confusion. And one can see the amount of confusion that has arisen in the name of the Gita. For example, Gita emphasizes on karma. So the general WhatsApp university, we will see from very authoritative voices that, well, you must do your karma. Whatever is your duty given to you, you should do it. But do it as a nishkam karma. So the question is, if you don't have any desires left, why would you do? Normally, there would be no impulsion. This is a very logical question. So average person, unless he has not entered the Gita, if he has not entered the Gita, he doesn't raise these questions. He just accepts it. Yes, we must do our duty. But he is still doing with desire. He doesn't realize it. One is not yet clear. But the moment you enter into the spirit of the Gita and the actual practice, this problem comes up. It's a very practical problem. Why should I act at all? And it's not even a question. It's a problem actually faced by the seeker. Because when everything becomes quiet, you don't feel like acting. There is a quietistic tendency which is there in human nature, which becomes prominent as we enter more and more deeper into the spiritual life. And this quietistic tendency has its justification. Why? Because the moment we act, we are pulled into the crowd, the melee, the discussions, the debates, and all kinds of things which a spiritual seeker does not normally and naturally enjoy. One of the signs of a spiritual preparedness, which is there in the Gita, and the mother also emphasizes, is that you begin to prefer solitude. You like to be alone. And next step is, with solitude, if you want to see God, meditation. So this is the common thing that everybody speaks of meditation, and this kind of popularity of meditation came especially after the Upanishads, because they did away with the ritualistic and all other elements of the Vedas and kept that inner core. Now, that inner core is also okay, meditating upon the divine, but this meditation took more and more a tendency towards withdrawal, towards an extreme. So we see today this whole thing, you know, overemphasis on not only meditation, but ultimately withdrawal from worldly life. And this has been so damaging to India. So people have used Gita for just the very opposite of what the Gita wants us to be and do. So Sri Aurobindo is taking great pains, because up against him are the great acharyas, which we don't. We take it easily, okay, Sri Aurobindo is saying so. But there are acharyas who justify, and they are respected, revered. People go to them, flock near them, and they teach us that, well, ultimately karma is a bondage. I myself heard it from very seemingly authoritative voices. Karma ultimately is a bondage, but it is allowed as a concession. So you have to do karma only because at this point of time, mind is restless, so might as well engage in some karma. What kind of karma should we do then in that case? So if you take the Vedantic idea, ritualistic karma. Everybody should from morning to evening engage in some prayers, ritual worship. At the same time, you can do your regular karmas, which is, getting ready for earning, you have to do something. So that's the ritualistic karma. If you ask the Buddhist doctrine, so they'll say acts of compassion, charity, things which are helpful to human nature. The nature's heavy knots of the ego are softened. So engage in works of compassion, charity, generosity. If you have money, give it for some cause. See patients free of cost. All this is the way we are advised, because man's nature is restless. To that comes the another addition coming from the other side of the globe, which is do your duties. do it well. So whatever your duty is, according to the society, you should do it. Meaning thereby, society is the one which decides for you the duty and you have to do it. Wives towards husband, husband towards wife is seldom emphasized, of course. Mostly it's wife towards husband and children towards parents. So there is a duty fixed for everyone by society. Now, this is not what Gita is saying. Sri Aurobindo again and again reminds us. Because if you look at India's tendency from the spiritual point of view, on one side, Indian society largely is not individualistic, but there is a lot of emphasis on the social things. So social aspects are very important in Indian society at least. But Indian spirituality is fiercely individualistic. That's a paradox. So when you are in society, you are supposed to act according to what the society expects of you. You can't say, I want to act according to my own standards. Generally, it is discouraged. Now times are changing and it is good for a particular reason. But on the other hand, when it comes to spirituality, you can abandon everybody. You can abandon parents, sister, brother, job, everything you can renounce and walk into the forest and you are revered. So, in human beings, we have both these tendencies, quietistic tendencies, and it is supposed, even encouraged, that if you want to take up a spiritual life, you must entertain, encourage, and strengthen these quietistic tendencies. On the other hand, man has a kinetic tendency. He wants to act, work. So, if you want to be a man of the world, it is this which is important. So, there is created an antagonism between the two. If you are in the world, you are a man of the world. You cannot be a man of God. But worldly life can be a preparation for the spiritual. By exhausting the karmas, at some point you begin to turn towards spiritual life. Or else, if you want to dedicate yourself to God, then you have to forget the world. Because naturally you would want to be quiet, you would want to be more peace-loving, etc., etc. So all these cobwebs, which are not, were not only during Sri Aurobindo's time, they are prominent even today. And very strongly prominent. So Sri Aurobindo is laying the background to clear all these cobwebs. It's so necessary. Even in ashram today, despite the mother speaking of works and she would give work to everybody, the tendency is that, well, ultimately spiritual life is an inner living. So even it is felt that if somebody is, and it again, both have their truths. It's not that they don't have a truth. But there is a tendency to believe that if you are a married person, you are already gone case. If you have a child, you are totally gone case. And if you have working in the world, you are completely gone. There can be no balance between that and a spiritual life. So here Sri Aurobindo is taking great pains, and while, as I said, both have their justification. Justification lies in the fact that too much engagement with the world and its ways as it stands today is not very conducive to a true spiritual living. There is no doubt about it. That's why we need spaces like ashram, Auroville, etc. But having said that, there is no fundamental antagonism between the two. One can, and eventually one should, and one must at some point be able to engage in all the activities of outer life and yet being deeply spiritual within. This is the goal. So this can at best be a stopgap arrangement where one strengthens the spiritual tendency. Even Sri Aurobindo, when he is there in Pondicherry, every time people would ask him that, you know, are you coming back to Bengal? So first he will say, Bengal is not ready. He didn't say, I will not come. Later on, he has even gone on to say, well, I may come back for the freedom movement. Just imagine. He said, I may come back. On the other hand, if you look at the mother, she is, if I may use the word, super active. Though till 26, she is largely in a solitary living, solitude, even in the ashram. Ashram was not formed. But then she is active from morning till night. So she gives another example that, well, man can be completely kinetic, dynamic, even physically, not just inwardly, and yet be deeply spiritual in every aspect. So the mother, by her living example, has shown us what a divine man or a divine woman or a divine personality would be by living example. And there is another example which we see in far back times, and that's the subject of this chapter. Sri Krishna tells Arjun, my own example. I often quote this word that people read the Gita, they speak about it. But for a long time, because even those who speak about the Gita, except a few, have largely been still ultimately in a monastery or an ashram. But we see Sri Aurobindo before coming to Pondicherry and the mother throughout. It's only 62 that she went upstairs, but even then she was engaged in all the affairs. You see, talks, community affairs, on Auroville, everything. And she has shown that one can live life divinely, even while being engaged in the world. So this is the basic background of the subject of this chapter. That a person, why would he act? What has action got to do with spiritual life? What will be his inner motive? And if he has to act, how he should act, that comes later on. So Sri Aurobindo builds up on this first, one of the Mahavakya, which we had read last time, and that Mahavakya was that you will sacrifice, and through the sacrifice you will realize in the self, then in me. So this was the key. So first one has to be freed from the sting of desire, the captivity of the ego which is driving us, the whirlpool of outer existence, material life, which sucks us completely inside. Even to maintain the framework of existence sucks us. We use the word needs, but needs, the line between needs and desires becomes thinner and thinner. So that's why the first importance is the self. Self means, he says, that the impersonal Brahman standing aloof from the world, and those who have this experience, it is so powerful that it's difficult to come back to work. There is no doubt about it. And unless one has moved along the lines of Sri Aurobindo's yoga, where you never withdraw completely like that into isolation, I mean, never is a strong word, some people may, but while doing engaged in works, when you arrive at this state of self, everything slows down, thoughts don't arise inside because the mind is completely calm, quiet, if not silent. There is no emotional surges. The vital has become quiet, it's no more restless. So the body also behaves accordingly. So what happens is that if you come back to work, it appears like a, oh, this is so blissful. This is the experience of the mother, that she is moving in the veranda and she describes that how when she is moving, Sri Krishna would be there. He's the Anandamay. So she will be in that bliss. And then once Krishna goes away, then she wants Sri Aurobindo. So Sri Aurobindo is walking. Then it's infinite peace and bliss. And then she says, why should I come out? It's so wonderful. I can stay in this state for lives. And so Sri Aurobindo also suddenly vanishes. Then the mother says, okay, Supreme. So she is with the Supreme. And then she describes it. First Krishna, then Sri Aurobindo, then the Supreme. But then she knows that I have to work. It's very difficult. Very difficult to explain this unless one has the overpowering experience. So there is a justification in this quietistic tendency. Very difficult. And yet that has to be done because it is difficult. Because if we don't do it, then there is no possibility of this world being redeemed. So first is in the self, then in me. So first thing should be to realize this state of inner peace, call it by whatever name, a vast, universal, immobile consciousness, by withdrawing from the surface life and its constant whirlpool. That's what mother speaks of, stepping back, witness self. Then, beyond the self of self, the divine, as a being. This is another very important aspect of the Gita. People often, there is big debate, yes, there is a power or there is a state of consciousness. No, sir, there is a being with whom. Why this is important? Because then all relations, all works can be justified. If it is just a state of consciousness, then there is no justification for any relation in the world. But a being relates with us. So that's the other part which is important. So we read a little passage on page 135. The idea of the Purushottama, seen here as the incarnate Narayana, Krishna, is therefore the key. So people often shy away from speaking of the mother and Sri Aurobindo as an incarnation. They feel, oh, we are making it a religion. But that is the key to this yoga. The mother even goes on to say that, well, it's the, she says that how the representative of the divine becomes the channel to direct the supreme will, and all who are connected with that representative, they automatically, their wills get united. So it's a very powerful means. And Sri Aurobindo quotes that how in the Bible it is said that, you know, I am the way and I am the goal. How Sri Krishna says, I am the way and I am the goal. So if we remove all that and just take the teachings denuded of the sense of the avatar and the mother and Sri Aurobindo as the supreme beings, then we actually miss out on the core. Here Sri Aurobindo is making it very, very clear. The idea of the Purushottam, seen here, both things, is Purushottam. Okay, he is inwardly in some highest heights. But he is also here, not only as a presence in the heart, but seen here as the incarnate Narayana, Krishna, is therefore the key. Why it is the key, he'll explain in a few more sentences, little more time. So let's read there the original. Without it, the withdrawal from the lower nature to the Brahmic condition leads necessarily to inaction of the liberated man. His indifference to the works of the world, because we have been engaging according to desires. When there are no desire, why would you engage? Automatically, it's a natural consequence. When you finish desire, why would I engage with anything? Duty? No, the sense of duty falls away. Whose duty? Man-made duty, social duty, but none of this is true. They are all play of ignorance. I can well say that I have no mother, no father, na tato, na mata, na bandhu, na bhrata. That's a reality. So then why? Why should one engage? So there comes the great injunction. See the silent Brahman as the goal, and the world with all its activities has to be forsaken. And it's so important, a point which is so easily missed. I have seen people even in Auroville coming and giving talks on Upanishads and the Brahman, not realizing ki if you don't bring in the Purushottam, you are again doing the same fatal mistake. So while it's okay to realize the Brahman, it is inevitable. But always we must keep in mind the Purushottam, who is the key to both. That's why when Sri Aurobindo was asked, is the realization of the mother lesser or higher than the Nirvikalp Samadhi? He says it's higher. She can give you both. She is the equivalent of the Purushottam, if you want to put it, and the beyond. Because we still say, oh, she has taken a form and all this is the Leela, but ultimately this is the impersonal. So he is going at pains. See the silent Brahman as the goal, and the world with all its activities has to be forsaken. See God, the divine, the Purushottam as the goal, superior to action. Yet its inner spiritual cause and object and original will. And the world with all its activities is conquered and possessed in a divine transcendence of the world. This is such an important message. See the world, the supreme, as impersonal Brahman, then everything has to be left. See the world, the supreme, as God, who acts through the impersonal Brahman. That's his state, perpetual. Then this world becomes, there is a purpose, there is a meaning, there is a will which is acting in the world. Then what happens when we see the divine as Purushottam? We can always substitute it Purushottam for the mother. Mother is of course one step further, but at least, you know, it can become, instead of a prison house, an opulent kingdom, Rajyam Samriddham, which we have conquered for the spiritual life by slaying the limitation of the tyrant ego and overcoming the bondage of our jailer desires and breaking the prison of our individualistic position and enjoyment. The liberated, universalized soul becomes Swarat, Samrat, self-ruler and emperor. Meaning thereby, if we work in the ashram or Auroville, it's not only a preparation so that one day we'll meditate and realize the divine. If such be the case, then why start with work? Why not go to forest and just withdraw? That's meaningless. But if you see Auroville as a manifestation of a truth of the divine, if you see ashram as a means to conquer space and time for the divine, then works assume a different significance. Now we have a different motive altogether. So when we work in Auroville and ashram, we are not just preparing ourselves. Some people who come from outside who are into these quietistic philosophies, they don't understand. They come and pass a remark. I have heard people say that. Are, this is okay, but ultimately, you know, you have to learn meditation and withdraw. You have to explain to them, no sir, that may be okay for you, but here there is a work to do, a work to fulfill, a purpose against which immense forces are arraigned against. So here we have this powerful, the liberated, universalized soul becomes Swarat, self-ruler, Samrat, world-ruler, self-ruler and emperor. And then there are examples. The works of sacrifice are thus vindicated as a means of liberation and absolute spiritual perfection, Sansiddhi. So works itself can liberate you. They are not just a preparation. And after liberation, you can continue the work. But that he will come step by step. So Janak and other great karma yogins of the mighty ancient yoga attained to perfection by equal and desireless works done as a sacrifice, without the least egoistic aim or attachment. Karmanneva hi samsiddhim. So these, Janak is a whole lineage of kings. So they worked without desire, ego, but they engaged in everything. Janak was married, he had 4 daughters, and he governed a kingdom. He went through all the challenges of life, but he is a yogi, he is a jivan mukt. This is the great ideal, not the ideal of the sannyasi. And Shobindu at one place in Aphorism also says that Vivekananda, exalting sannyas, once remarked that there is one Janak here and there. So you can't generalize the ideal of Janak. Shobindu says, but Janak is not a man, but a lineage of kings. And which is true. You see, read about different Janaks. Their lineage, they taught to the world. Same you see in the lineage of Rama. All of them great kings, warriors. This was original Indian Arya Dharma. And these kings, they are regarded as kings of solar dynasty. What a life they led. Life of Dharma, inwardly completely free. Even when all his life is at stake, Rama would not waver from the true course according to the Dharma that is impelling him. Very difficult to be like that. So too with Krishna. Krishna's understanding of Dharma is so much more subtle. And yet both of them are on the path of Dharma, which I'll talk about some other time. But essentially, work, that is what is emphasized for the true purpose. So through works, Janak, etc., got the Siddhi. All the kings in the lineage of Rama, if you go back to their history, Dilip, Raghu, the line of Raghu, Sagar, Bhagirath, Shivi, 25 kings, and you see all of them, they were standing by truth, they were inwardly free and yet engaging in the world. So too, and with the same desirelessness, after liberation and perfection, works can have to be continued by us in a large divine spirit with the calm high nature of a spiritual royalty. That's why they are, you know, kings, Samrat, Swarat. Thou shouldst do works regarding also the holding together of the peoples. Now he gives the motive. I don't have any individual desire and family, etc. I am not attached to them. Why should I work? So Sri Krishna gives the first hint. Lok Sangrahart. Holding together of the people. And so true that, you know, if you look at it from the liberated point, man's point of view, how can you feel your liberation is complete as long as even one single soul is under ignorance? You're bound to work because your consciousness becomes universalized. Division ceases to be me, mine, that person's soul, my soul. You enter into that sense of the great universal soul. So in any case, so work is for holding the march of togetherness. This is the first step, not the last. Whatsoever the best doeth, that the lower kind of man puts into practice. The standard he creates, the people follow. So this was one of the big, big problems of India. It is still there, and that's why I emphasize it 1,000 times, that people rever the monks in the monasteries, the sannyasis, but they are unable, they don't have the eyes to see the man who is active in the world yet free inside. We don't have the eyes, so we still have that ideal. We still have, oh, you know, this man had, he was so rich. Recently there was one person in Jain Sadhu he became. So there was a big fanfare. He had some property worth millions. He gave away everything. And then, you know, with much fanfare, he went to take sannyas. There was a cruise arranged for many of these, last party, it's like, celebrating renunciation. But that is not renunciation. You had so much worth, money, everything. You could have put it to the best uses in this world. But instead you gave it away. To whom? Ultimately. Either to the state or in his case with all his family members who would be very happy. But if you see, it's the great, if you look at from the Indian point of view, it's a sin actually. You have may pauperize them of their energies because you have given them all the money. And you have earned a name for yourself that I have become a big monk. So all this stupidity that goes on in the name of spiritual living, so it's time to talk about it. He will continue to work. Why won't he continue to work? He'll continue to hold the march of civilization. And such people, when you make them an example, then naturally people say, I wish I could do that, but I can't, I'm attached, I have desires. I wish I could walk away like that sannyasin. So that's why Sri Krishna is first telling Arjun, please don't do that. I count you among the best. And if you also do this, run away from this world, people will follow your example. Because they regard you as their best man, Shrestha. O son of Pritha, I have no work that I need to do in all the three worlds. Then he is giving his own example. I have nothing that I have not gained and have yet to gain. And I abide verily in the paths of action. Now this, as I said, is so important. And in our context, that's why the mother. Because people often quote, misquote, that Sri Aurobindo withdrew in a room and they start following. As if by staying in a room, they will realize all that Sri Aurobindo. Shivinda was working on the world and he was never completely withdrawn. He was working in the world. If you see, his room is so beautifully, it's not an ascetic's room. You see the rooms of Sri Aurobindo. It's so rich in its own beautiful way, not rich in an ostentatious way. Divinely rich. It carries its own royalty. Many people wonder. Because they, first time when they go, oh, what are these objects inside the cupboard? When they see the bed, looks like a king of kings. No? When you see his sofa where he would sit. So he has led a life of divine life. But still we see outwardly, oh, Sri Aurobindo has sort of, you know, he is withdrew. So people think by shutting in the room. I know people who actually tried it. And all that it does is either makes you crazy because you believe that you are like Sri Aurobindo by fact of withdrawing. But thank God we have the mother engaged right till 71, 72. She is taking interest in the formation of Auroville. Just imagine, community talks. I think till 73 almost, aspiration talks. 70 to 100%, I don't remember when is the last conversation, probably early 73. She is taking interest. Lok Sangrahart, her own example. So she did not choose to retire. She was staying in one room. But from one room, she was like a, again, queen of queens, empress, looking after every aspect of the kingdom, smallest aspects. So he is saying that, well, this is the example. And why this is important? Because, again, page 136, that why should the person act? It is not the rule, somewhere in the middle. It is not the rule of a large moral and intellectual altruism which is here announced, but that of a spiritual unity with God and with this world of beings who dwell in him and in whom he dwells. So people make this okay. Lok Sangrahart means I should engage in works of piety. So as a doctor, I should see patients free. If I am a rich man, I should just distribute blankets and food. No, he is not referring to moral and intellectual work, but something else. But to fulfill the individual in God, it is not an injunction to subordinate the individual to society, that henceforth I have no individual desire, so I will live for the society. If that be the goal, then every philanthropist is doing it. Or immolate egoism on the altar of the human collectivity, but to fulfill the individual in God and to sacrifice the ego on the one true altar of the all-embracing divinity. After one more line, patriotism, cosmopolitanism, service of society, collectivism, humanitarianism, the ideal or religion of humanity are admirable aids towards our escape from a primary condition of individual, family, social, national ego, egoism into a secondary stage in which the individual realizes, as far as it can be done on the intellectual, moral and emotional level, on that level he cannot do it entirely in the right and perfect way, the way of the integral truth of his being, the oneness of his existence with the existence of other beings. Now this is important because, again, once I heard, not too long back, maybe a couple of years back, someone was speaking in this, probably this very hall or maybe in Bharat Auditorium. And he said, why don't I see Auroville engaged with activities like in some place, there are so many spiritual movements, they are engaged in activities. What kind of activities? They are doing something for the welfare of the people around. Auroville is not engaged. I mean, it may be engaged in some activities of this kind. But that, and he says that can be done as a primary corrective to our egoism. But that's not the goal. Because the goal before Auroville is much greater. It is to live in God, act in God. Live for God, act for God. Not for humanity and society, which people often think that act for God means what? Human beings. They take it as synonymous, but they are not synonymous. So this is where we see he is. And then of course, Shobindo takes the example of Indian thought, because people will say, no, how can you say that? So he gives the example, page 137. The Indian social tendency has been to subordinate the individual to the claims of society. But Indian religious thought and spiritual seeking have been always loftily individualistic in their aims. So we can see that in people who left entirely everything and went in their own pursuit of their own individual liberation. Buddha walking away from his family life. So it has been individualistic. Sri Krishna will take us to the third level. But he is saying that this idea that when you are free, you must work for society and community, that's a misunderstanding, a misconception. Again, he is saying don't work for community and society. If you feel compelled to do it, do it. It will correct your hard egoism. But it's not yet the true spiritual thing. So the true spiritual thing he will reveal to us. So few lines below. To exceed himself was their goal for the individual, not by losing all his personal aims in the aims of an organized human society. This is where religion comes in. So religion also becomes like a society for which you must live. And that's why when Mother says no religion, it also means basically no organized religion, not the religious impulse which is the turn towards the sacred. Organized religion, you have to go by the need of the organization. So, To exceed himself was a goal for that individual, not by losing all his personal aims in the aims of an organized human society, which includes organized religions, but there is a difference between the religious tendency and the organized religion. But by enlarging, heightening, aggrandizing himself into the consciousness of the Godhead. The rule given here by the Gita is the rule for the master man. So you see, it means that even if you are part of a collectivity, even a so-called spiritual or religious collectivity, a monastery, an ashram or whatever, but ultimately you are living for God. Even if it means moving away or contradicting what the general people think. But the purpose is not that. Purpose is to live for God. And see, this is so powerful here. He says the rule given here by the Gita is the rule for the master man. The superman. See, he is using the word, who is the superman? The divinized human being. The best. Not in the sense of any Nietzschean, which is a titanic superman. Any one-sided and lopsided, any Olympian, Apollonian or Dionysian, any angelic or demonic supermanhood, but in that of the man whose whole personality has been offered up into the being, nature and consciousness of the one transcendent and universal divinity, and by the loss of the smaller self has found its greater self, has been divinized. So that we may say, oh, okay, we don't have to live for society. So I can do whatever I feel like. Now that is the titanic ideal. Ravan doesn't care for anybody. He says, I am my own standard. This is not what Sri Aurobindo is asking us. You don't live for society, but equally you don't live for your own egoistic individuality aggrandizing itself. You live for God. Subordinating all your impulses, all tendencies, all social and individualistic impulses to the divine impulsion. That's a far more difficult thing. That's why he says, the master man, and the sign is to exalt oneself out of the lower imperfect prakriti, tregunyamai maya, into unity with the divine being, consciousness and nature. Madbhavam magataha is the object of the yoga. It's a beautiful word. So what happens with that? Madbhavam. So you are full of the consciousness of the divine. Madbhavam magata. Fully surrendered to the divine. And we see a little footnote below that what is the divine being's consciousness and nature when you rise into sayujya, that means union with the divine, salokya, dwelling in the same status as the divine, and sadrasya or sadharma, developing the same nature as the divine nature, is becoming of one law of being and action with the divine. So this is the goal. And then next page, his motive of action in the middle. His motive of action can only be the holding together of the peoples. And what is this holding together? On the forward march of civilization. Not its sliding backward. Holding together of the people not for revolt and reaction and taking a flag and doing dharna. Holding together the people toward the great goal of spiritual evolution. That is his purpose. And he does best by his own example. That's where Sri Krishna says that he doesn't have to speak. He is living that life, people will be inspired. The best, the individuals who are in advance of the general line and above the general level of the collectivity are the natural leaders of mankind. For it is they who can point to the race both the way they must follow and the standard or ideal they have to keep to or to attain. But the divinized man is the best in no ordinary sense of the word, and his influence, his example must have a power which that of no ordinary superior man can exercise. What example then shall he give? What rule or standard shall he uphold? Classic example is Sri Krishna and, as I said, the mother. There is not an activity, not a relationship they have not revealed. How to be in the world, but completely in the divine. So, we have, next page. He says, second line, third line, this too must be thy manner and spirit of working. The way Sri Krishna gives an old example. I, the divine, am the rule and the standard. Divine can do anything he pleases. If that's how we think, oh, why can't he do this? Why can't he do that? He's a magic doer. But Sri Krishna reminds us, it is I who make the path in which men tread. I am the way and the goal. But I do all this largely, universally, visibly in part, but far more invisibly. And men do not really know the way of my workings. So the divine will not do magics and miracles. If you have to go through certain things, he will make you go through certain things, but he will soften it. Sometimes he may completely remove it. Because it's an evolutionary step. Supposing he magically removes all the difficulties on our path, outer and inner, then what will happen? The greatest difficulty is the ego, which has not subordinated or abdicated to the divine. Then we'll think, ah, see, I am such a great yogi. I have no inner difficulties. Except, in brackets, that I think I am a great yogi. If all my outer difficulties are gone in a trice, then the step through which I have to move, grow in strength, grow in endurance, equanimity, love for the divine, it will not happen. That's why though Sri Aurobindo and the mother, even with we see with Sri Krishna, though they could do anything, they would not do it like that. This is a classic case of Sahanadi. She had a lot of bleeding and she was admitted in the hospital. Uterine bleeding that women are sometimes prone to. And she prays and prays and she says, ask Sri Aurobindo, I've been praying, is he doing something? So Sri Aurobindo sends a letter. Tell her that whatever best we can do, we are doing for her. This bleeding, he doesn't use the word bleeding, these are the last remnants of her sexual desire which are going away in this way. Then she understands. These are the ways of his working. They are being washed away. If you magically stop, the tendency is still inside. This tendency will express in another way. That's why divine way of curing is similar to homeopathy. That's how Shivinda says. Of course, true homeopathy. That it picks up the tendencies from the root. There is no magic remedy. Allopathy is more like a magic remedy. But because the energies remain inside, they bring out other diseases. You correct hypertension, diabetes is waiting around the corner. You correct diabetes, something else is waiting. Again, one has to take because one is not ready for that kind of a deeper therapy. But ultimately the divine way is to take the thing right from the roots. That's why it takes time and one has to understand the way of the working. Thou, when thou knowest and seest, when thou hast become the divinized man, must be the individual power of God, not a power of society, not representing this or that group, must be a power of God. The human yet divine example, even as I am in my avatars. Most men dwell in the ignorance, the God seer dwells in the knowledge, but let him not confuse the minds of men by a dangerous example, rejecting in his superiority the works of the world. Let him not cut short the thread of action before it is spun out. Let him not perplex and falsify the stages and gradations of the ways I have sown. That's why people don't understand Aurovel. That's why they don't understand ashram. Mother should do magic, everything should be happening immediately. Well, we got to change. With the ashram, the mother gave the same message. That the only solution is a conversion and a radical change of the members. You don't change inside, you will keep meeting the difficulties. Because that's the way. He will help you, assist you, take you through that journey. But it's a journey you have to undertake. The community as well as the individual. If you don't do it, you'll be smashed, hit, whatever it is. And then we'll blame or take out things like a utopia gone, dystopia. No, sir. Utopia will manifest. But you have to go through the journey. So this is the important part which we need to understand and how we have to act. Outwardly, toward the end on this page, outwardly his actions may not seem to differ essentially from theirs. Battle and rule, as well as teaching and thought, all the various commerce of man with man may fall in his range, but the spirit in which he does them must be very different. And it is that spirit which by its influence shall be the great attraction, drawing men upwards to his own level, the great lever lifting the mass of men higher in their ascent. That's why it's so difficult people to understand the ashram. People, this mother describes, somebody came and said, but I can't see spirituality here. Well, everybody is active. You can't stop somebody and ask, tell me something about Mother Yashoda. He'll say, ask somewhere else. Read their books. I have no time. So they can't understand. There is no collective. Now we have collective meditation in the playground, but nothing compulsory. They are looking for some monk who is sitting for hours in meditation or doing japa constantly. They don't see. They don't understand. So when this was told to the mother, that so and so remarked that he doesn't see. Mother and Shurbindo are great, but he doesn't see much of spirituality here. Mother laughed and said, he doesn't understand. He doesn't understand. Because the way of spirituality is very different here. And you won't even see a formal dress. So you will pass by people and not realize or recognize. The giving of the example of God himself to the liberated man is profoundly significant, for it reveals the whole basis of the Gita's philosophy of divine works. The liberated man is he who has exalted himself into the divine nature, and according to that divine nature must be his actions. But what is the divine nature? It is not entirely and solely that of the akshara, the immobile, inactive, impersonal self, for that by itself would lead the liberated man to actionless immobility. It is not characteristically that of the shar, the multitudinous, the personal, the purusha's self subjected to prakriti, for that by itself would lead him back into subjection to his personality and to the lower nature and his qualities. It is the nature of the Purushottama who holds both these together and by his supreme divinity reconciles them in a divine reconciliation, which is the highest secret of his being. Rahasyam yetada uttamam. This is the first. He is revealing a secret. It's a great secret. The example of the divine is the avatar. And that's why it's so important, so liberating to read the life of Sri Aurobindo and the mother. Even that was corrupted, has been corrupted. It's not just life. It is going to give so much, not only joy, the path is there entirely. If you read his life, Sri Aurobindo is Life Unique by Rishabh Chand. If you read it, you don't have to actually read about yoga. You understand how to live that yoga. You read how mother lived, how her responses were. I mean, so many of them. For example, once, so many come to my mind. One of them was when Bansidhar is going to clean Sri Aurobindo's room. Mother is standing at the door. She says, there is an instruction from Sri Aurobindo. What is the instruction? Don't disturb me in my meditation? No. Sri Aurobindo says, there is a sparrow sitting there on the door. You must see that when you work, don't disturb the sparrow. Sri Aurobindo's instruction. Another time when Bansidharji has accidentally, he saw some paper chits in the bathroom and he threw them away, flushed them away, cleaned them away. Chits, maybe by mistake. And the mother is furious. How could you do that? They were chits which people have written. She would reply, sitting in the bathroom. So he is shaken. Next time a perfume bottle drops. Now you can't even conceal it. He is waiting. I don't know what's going to happen. So he comes out and tells mother, that expensive bottle of French perfume got broken. Mother says, no problem. Be more careful and conscious. Finished. He doesn't understand. The value of those papers which are torn is much greater than that perfume which is. But you have to be careful and conscious. So when we look at their life, when cat is sitting on Sri Aurobindo's chair and Sri Aurobindo comes to sit there, he sits quietly on the corner without disturbing the cat. And I have seen in society once a talk was going on. Suddenly XYZ who held a post came there, and the moment somebody had by mistake was sitting on her chair, she laughed. You don't know this chair is meant for me and all that. And it's not only there, so many places. Chairman, special chair mark, this never was the culture of the ashram. It's not supposed to be like that. Sri Aurobindo and a cat, and people know that he will not appreciate if you throw away. He's sitting on the quietly on the corner. You don't need to sit like this to meditate. Look how much he is revealing. That story of Amrita recounts before mother's coming physically that they would find that the money that is being given is disappearing suddenly. They are wondering who is the thief. So they are just three of them who are staying there. Who is the thief then? So they wait to see. The milkman comes and nobody is around. So he keeps the milk, then looks all around. Then quietly pulls the drawer, takes out 5 rupees. Those days, huh? This is 1912-13. Quietly closes, puts the money in his cap, puts it and adjusts the cap and starts walking away. And all these three pounce upon him. Got him! And they are about to say or raise, they raise their voice. They are about to do something and suddenly they see Sri Aurobindo appearing on the threshold. He was used to be inside. In those worlds, suddenly he comes on the threshold, and Amrita described when he looked at us, we felt we are guilty. We are guilty. We have done a mistake, not the thief. All that he said was, let the man go, and turned back and went away. Now, when we read these divine examples, how he would be patient, food is coming so late, and he is waiting, mother will bring the food. He is not asking, not looking at the watch. But for mother, he is concerned. Every 10 minutes he is asking Champaklalji, has mother come? Night 10:30. No. Has mother come? No. Why is it taking so late? Now you see the other extreme. Because he knows she is working on so many worlds. Then around 11, he says, I suppose now I can retire. That is the divine example. When you look at his life, never he would raise a voice, never he would shout at somebody, never he would say, this is my order, you do this work. How different is our example? By order, do this. Almost like a bureaucratic office. The mother never gave that example. They would suggest, leave you free. Because true spirituality can blossom. I could go on this. I mean, I love this, reading their lives. And as I said, unfortunately, even that man doesn't leave. His own disciples, and he spoke about killing in cold print, murdering in cold print by his own disciples. That's exactly what they tried to do. So that even that example is not left for us. So that people can start wondering whether he was sane or not sane. But actually when we look at his life, what a life. It's so liberating. You're just reading Sri Aurobindo and the mother's life liberates you. That's why in India we had this parallel tradition of reading Ramayana, reading Bhagavat. You don't need to read. You read these books, you feel liberated. So this is the example that he's speaking of it. And he speaks of this life of the avatar as the Uttamam Rahasyam, first secret. He will reveal 3 great secrets in the Gita. First secret is God's own example. Know me, says Krishna, for the doer of this, the fourfold law of human workings, I am yet the imperishable non-doer. Works fix not themselves on me. Nor have I desire for the fruits of action. All the fourfold order, Sri Krishna does the works of the Brahmin when he gives the Gita. He does the works of the Kshatriya when he fights the battle. He does the works of the Vaishya when he negotiates. And he does the works of the Shudra when, during the Rajasu Yag, he lifts up the, plates in which people have eaten. That is the task he takes, that I lift up those plantain leaves plates after they've finished and take it. So all the works he does, from washing the feet to being the ruler of a kingdom, from there to being the Yogeshwar. So his life becomes the example. So this is the basic essence. I think we have, rest is, he's developing upon that, that these two tendencies. We'll just skip to the end. Page 144. Because this is the essence on which he's developing. So neither Akshar nor Shar, but the Purushottama. The Akshara alone is not the whole key of their fulfillment, not the very highest secret. So that's why he uses the word Rahasyam Uttamam, Purushottam. It's a Rahasya, his divine incarnation. It's a great secret. The double fulfillment, the reconciliation is to be sought in the Purushottama represented here by Krishna at once, Supreme Being, Lord of the worlds, and Avatar. So now he'll develop the Avatar. That's where chapter 4. First we must understand what it means. Who is the Avatar? The Supreme himself takes a human body. So who is the Supreme? Beyond these, not just an impersonal, vague abstraction. The divinized man entering into his divine nature. He has a divine nature. The divine is a divine nature. This is lower nature and this is the divine nature. So when we abandon this nature, doesn't mean only quiescence. This is the divine nature which we can assume. All that he will explain later in great length. The divinized man entering into his divine nature will act even as he acts. He will not give himself up to inaction. The divine is at work in man in the ignorance and at work in man in the knowledge. So we have to go beyond ignorance and knowledge. And that's how the Isha Upanishad puts it. Vidyancha vidyancha yast dvedo bhayam sa. Vidya is knowledge. Avidya is ignorance. So ordinarily we feel from ignorance, we should go to knowledge. No, you have to rise beyond ignorance and knowledge. Ignorance is multiplicity. You are different, this is different, that is different, all. Knowledge is oneness. No, no, we are all ultimately that. But then how do you act? In manifestation, there will be differences. Transcend both and relate with the world as the divine deals with this world in many different ways. Divine is different in his dealings with Arjun and different in his dealings with Karna. And Karna at times asks, he says, why are you being partial towards Arjun? I am an equally great warrior. You should allow both of us to just have a duel. You don't intervene. That's how Balram says in Bhima and Duryodhan's fight, why you have intervened? And then he says, Lok Sangrahart, Dharma. If Karna wins, Dharma loses. It's not about Arjun. The civilization goes down along the lines of Duryodhan. If Arjun wins, Dharma wins. Civilization evolves along the lines of the Devas. So, doesn't matter what people will call him. He is with Dharma. Same with Vali and Sugriva. So when in this world the divine doesn't act like this, oh, I am in everybody, so it's okay. No, the law of manifestation he respects. And he sees the collective march, which way it is going. That's why when Shurvindra intervened on behalf of the allies, people didn't understand. They said, "Arey, I wish Hitler won because Hitler is an enemy of British and British are enemies of Indians, so better they lose." Subhash Chandra Bose was even shaking hands. And Shubhendra says, you don't know. At least if Britishers even, anyways they are going to leave. But even if they continued for some more time, ultimately, the path of evolution will remain open. If Hitler wins, it's finished. So my concern is much deeper. So between the two, if I have to choose, I choose to put myself against the Axis powers and in favor of the Allies. Because the path of evolution must remain open. British can be tackled, but Hitler cannot be tackled. So this is how the logic of divine working continues. To know him in our souls is our soul's highest welfare and the condition of its perfection. But to know and realize him as a transcendent peace and silence is not all. Means we have to know God, but he's not just transcendent silence and peace. The secret that has to be learned is at once the secret of the eternal and unborn divine, and the secret of the divine birth and works. Janma karma cha me divyam. So this is the great secret he will reveal in the next few lines, chapters or passages, that the secret of the divine taking a birth. Because if silence is all, avatarhood has no meaning. Why should divine intervene in this world's affairs? World is an illusion anyways. So there are strict Vedantins and Arya Samajis who don't believe in avatarhood. Why? Because why should divine assume a limited form and name? Even if he could, why would he? Silence is all. He is in his silence. We can enter into that silence. He is opening the doors for us. Why should he assume a human form and name? And that is something which is the subject of the subsequent chapters. Beautiful chapters. But before we close, the action which proceeds from that knowledge will be free from all bondage. He who so knoweth me, says the teacher, is not bound by works. If the escape from the obligation of works and desire and from the wheel of rebirth is to be the aim and the ideal, then this knowledge is to be taken as the true, the broad way of escape. For, says the Gita, he who knows in their right principles my divine birth and works, comes when he leaves his body not to rebirth, but to me, O Arjun. So that's why when we leave the body, we are not seekers of the ineffable silence who dissolve in Brahman. We go further. We go to Shurbindo's dham, in the abode of Shurbindo and the mother, from where we return again and again till the great work is accomplished, and who knows even further. So that's why this difference is important. And Shurbindo spends a lot of time and his divine energy to give us this teaching. Jai Maa.